Hello and welcome to the QA Therapy podcast. Are you looking to improve your overall testing and quality practices? My name is Sergio Freire and I'm a solution architect and a testing advocate at X-Ray.
And my name is Cristiano Cunha and I'm also a solution architect and test advocate. And we'll be your hosts and QA therapists throughout this series. In this podcast, we're going to tackle some of the most common testing and quality challenges that we all face in our teams. So if this sounds good to you, keep on listening. Automated testing is a must nowadays, but the way we approach it and define an automation strategy is not always straightforward. Most of the time, we replicate end-to-end flows with automation and end up with long executions with a lot of instability. Development, however, has evolved and made unit tests as part of their deliverables, making unit validation closer to conception. Why can we not apply the same principles to testing and insist in these long end-to-end suites? Or can we? So to assist us with this topic, we have a special guest with us, Nikolai Advolodkin. So before welcoming him, let's see what really brings you here. What are the symptoms that you may be feeling that bring you to listen to this podcast? So ask yourself, are your automated tests taking too long? Or even do you have a lot of instability on your executions, the so-called flaky tests? Or even maintenance of the automated suite is taking most of your time? Or even, are you unable to execute parallel tests because they have dependencies between them and must be executed in some specific order in order to work?
All these are symptoms that we are not addressing test automation in the best way. We need to take a step back and rethink how we are addressing test automation overall. And sometimes it is hard to do because breaking end-to-end workflows into small atomic tests is not trivial, at least at first sight. Nevertheless, the gains on speed and stability are staggering. Let's dive a bit into this topic. And today we have here with us Nikolai Advolodkin, our expert QA therapist to assist on diagnosis and prescription on these symptoms related to testing in a more atomic way. Nikolai is a frequent speaker on conferences and the creator of ultimateqa.com, where you can find a lot of information about automation overall. He also has a YouTube channel with a lot of content regarding automation testing. Welcome, Nikolai. Are you comfortable on our QA therapy couch?
Hey guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm extremely comfortable and I'm excited to be a therapist for the day.
Great. So let's get the show running. And the first question that I'd love to ask you is this about this concept. In your blog posts, you talk about the similarity between unit tests and atomic tests. So can you tell us a bit more about it and shed some light about what atomic testing is?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. It's not dangerous. It's not dangerous, right?
They're not nuclear atomic tests. absolutely. So yeah, you can, by the way, find this blog post on my website, ultimateqa.com. If you search for atomic tests, you'll probably get what Sergio is talking about. But the concept of atomic testing arose around the problems that we kept seeing at Sauce Labs. I've seen this throughout my whole industry, but the great view that I got to have at Sauce Labs, being a solutions architect, I get to work literally with hundreds of customers all over the world of different sizes, from small to large, facing different types of problems, and a lot of times the same problems. A lot of these problems tend to be slow test execution. It's really what Cristiano pointed out in the beginning of the episode. All of those symptoms are what we saw. And so atomic tests are basically a way to solve all of those symptoms and come to a better solution in terms of your automated testing. Now, why it's compared to unit testing is that whenever we think of a unit test is extremely small. It's something that tests a single method or maybe something, a small part of a component, something like that. In whenever we look at unit tests, we don't even think of many times having more than a few assertions. If we have a few assertions, they're going to be on one area. Maybe you're checking a few attributes of that area, but you're never checking more than one feature. You're never validating multiple methods. It's not very common. And so in atomic testing, even a lot of times in integration testing, you'll find the tests go after a single feature. They validate that that single feature works with one or maybe a few assertions. And then after that, they're done. So the tests are very focused. When the tests fail, they tell us exactly why they failed. Hey, I tried to use the add method and I tried to add 2 plus 2. And instead of getting 4, I got 5. Something isn't working about the add method. That is a unit test and it's atomic and you know exactly why. While with UI tests, we have a challenge in that UI tests are, they cover the end user scenario really well, but they also touch so many technologies. And so, right, you start at the UI layer and now you're touching the UI layer that interacts with some JavaScript, that JavaScript maybe interacts with some APIs, those APIs interact with some databases, and you go all the way down a stack. You have to deal with the network as well in order to figure out what's going wrong with your test. And so if you have a long test, something that navigates screen to screen, does a bunch of different things, whenever your test fails, it's extremely difficult to figure out exactly what went wrong. Was it a network connection? Was it my test was too fast? Was it my test was too slow? Or was it an improper locator or some other number of reasons why the test may fail? And so the idea of making those tests more atomic is ultimately creates a situation for us.
Supporting root cause analysis, right?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was trying to say. Thanks, Sergio. It's exactly supporting better root cause analysis, right? If we think about all software development, maintenance costs are where we spend the majority of the time. It's not in creation of new feature costs. It's in maintenance costs. And so the idea for all software development, automation testing included, because it is software development, is to minimize those maintenance costs, and moving in the atomic test pattern helps us to do that.
Yeah, I also hear sometimes this approach of layered approach about testing. It is a little bit how we should think about this, right? Because you try to test more atomic units, but you need to test it in all of those different places that you have been speaking about in order for them to sum up all those results and you'll be able to pinpoint exactly what's happening. But all of this that you have been talking about and the similarity that you have with unit tests, who, in your opinion, should be responsible for implementing those atomic tests? Do you think it's someone more technical that needs to do something like this, or like the unit tests that are really technical, or not so much?
Tricky question.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, if we're atomic tests, as I already mentioned, unit and integration tests tend to be atomic by their very nature because the people implementing those typically understand that we want a focused feedback loop from our testing to quickly take action on. Now, this problem gets bigger in UI automation, and that's why a lot of times we're talking around what is an atomic test and how to do it with UI automation, because it's less common. So whoever's implementing the UI automation, if we want to do the best job that we can, and we want to be the most professional that we can and provide the most value to our employers, I think it's our job to implement the atomic tests. Now, maybe you don't start there because you're learning along the way. I didn't start there. I used to automate long end-to-end user journeys because that's how I learned automation was done, and that's what I thought good automation was. But you can transition there over time, and over time learn how to break up your large end-to-end flows into many smaller atomic scenarios that you can then execute in parallel and get not only faster feedback, but also more focused and less maintenance costs.
By curiosity, Nikolai, did you ever worry in a project where you had to, where you found out like one single test, end-to-end test, doing everything, like one script? It was not even a test. Did you ever encounter that? I'm asking just because I have a friend that I can speak his name, which is Sergio, that I came across several of those projects. Did you ever came across with something like that?
Like a test that tests pretty much everything, just goes page to page. Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. And actually at my first workplace, this was a long time ago. We, back in that day, QGP ran by HP. Oh, you guys are probably
familiar. Yeah, I'm from that time. I'm from that time.
Oh, you're from that time. Okay, so you're familiar. That was the popular tool at that time. And we had a team of like 5 or 6 engineers working on automating one long end-to-end flow for like a year. And we never ended up finishing it because of many mistakes were made in that project. But one of the mistakes was we tried to automate everything on every page. Hey, we're already on this page. Why don't we check for everything and keep doing that on every page? And so, we spent a lot of money for our employer and ultimately never got them any value.
Okay, but coming back to the atomic tests, let's talk about the good things. So in terms of process, although development and testing process, so exactly where do you think people should consider, let's say, atomic tests? Should this something be thought at start or throughout?
That's a great question, Sergio. So atomic testing is very dependent on the testability of the application. I will give you all a real life example I faced at a previous workplace. We had a wonderful suite of automated tests that I helped to organize with my team of engineers. A typical scenario would execute for about a minute. Majority of that time was spent logging in because we had a login and data setup process that could only happen through the UI. The majority of that time was spent logging in and setting up the state, and the actual test would be like a few seconds to actually open up the state of the application and validate what it needed to validate. Few seconds, the rest of that time setting up. We couldn't do an atomic test then because the only way to log in and set up data was through the UI. I was working along with the development team. I told them the problem. I came to them and I said, hey, look, like 50 seconds of our 1 minute test is just to log in and set up the state of the application. Can we expose an endpoint so that we can do this through the API, do a web request, set up the data, log in, and then our test will be like 5 seconds long, and we can, and everyone can do this. This developers had to do this manually through the UI, and the testers had to do this in us automation. It would have saved time for the entire organization, you know? And so we were working towards that. After that, I got recruited by Sauce Labs, and so I left. But ultimately, that would have been the transition to becoming more atomic, in that now we could have had one test that actually goes through the entire UI and then validates that you can do all the things you need to do and then get into the app. And then all the other tests could have then just used the API layer to authenticate and then perform the appropriate operations. So sorry, I took a long route there to answer Sergio, but what I was trying to show there is that if I didn't have the developer's assistance to make our application more testable, and we wouldn't have been able to implement atomic tests.
People always forget testability, and they pick the software as is, and they, and sometimes it's like working with something really hard to manage, and implementing test automation on something fragile gets fragile results.
Yeah,
but
fragile,
moving
fragile and legacy. A lot of legacy stuff too. I've seen systems where they can only log in with one user at a time, and they only have one test user. And so if you try to run atomic tests in parallel, that'll break because you can't do that with the users. And so, you know, that goes again back to making the application testable.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of this way of thinking, switching to atomic tests, will force everyone to rethink also how we do software and how we deliver. The simple fact that you're suggesting the API sometimes is just a plus that comes out of the activity of testing of quality. But other than you have been talking about fast delivery and running tests in parallel, and it's a big advantage of using atomic tests. But do you see any other advantages for teams that are, I don't know, into DevOps, using pipelines, in using this approach of atomic tests?
Yeah, I think running tests in parallel and fast is wonderful. But now, for me, honestly, nowadays, that's the normal. If I don't have test suites that don't run in parallel and fast. Like, I want my entire CI/CD pipeline, depending on the size of the application, 10 minutes to build, test, and deploy app would be all perfect. Maximum, I'll allow 20 minutes to build, test, and deploy everything. So that's like the standard. For me, the biggest win from the atomic tests is the focused feedback. So it's like, if we go back to UI testing, of a very common scenario we always come across is, I need to log in and do something after login, right? So if every time you have to log in and do something after the login and something in that process fails, it's a little bit harder to detect why it failed. Well, for example, if you have one UI test that logs in through the UI, and then the rest of the tests will log in through like an API using something like a JSON web token, or I don't know, some kind of OAuth or something like that. Now the API part, if it fails, it'll be really clear that it fails, because you'll try to authenticate, you'll get some kind of an error message from your API. Oh, okay, what's up with our authentication mechanism? It's not working. If that passes, you haven't dealt with any UI issues, and then you'll be good to go. And then now, if you're doing any kind of UI interactions afterwards, there'll be way less of them and way less potential for things to go wrong. And so the amount of debugging and troubleshooting you'll have to do afterwards is just way easier. And so it just makes the entire developer experience nicer when you don't have to go and sift through so many failed, flaky tests that aren't failing for valid reasons.
And another question, let's say, provocative question. Do you think, are atomic tests enough? What else should we have in place if you think they are not enough to have better coverage? And this is also a tricky question.
It is a tricky question. Enough, yeah. Enough for what?
Yeah. That's good.
To cover everything, because we need to test everything, right?
Or let me try to connect that with another question that we have, that somehow, do you see like people not in your interactions, do you see people not trusting enough on this atomic test, and then try to do other sorts of, let's call it, manual testing, even though manual testing is not really a great word, but many of our listeners understand what we mean with it. So,
yeah, great question, Sergio. Very, very insightful, actually. Yeah, I do find that whenever I talk about atomic testing or give demonstrations, people, it's something we've learned throughout the industry somewhere, that we believe that our automated tests need to be executed in exactly the same ways as we execute manual tests in order to actually provide value. But that's not the case. The way automated tests operate and manual tests operate are different. And so whenever they see the fact that I'm authenticating with an API first before logging in, they're like, whoa, 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 but a user doesn't do it like that. And I'm like, yes, I know, but our system does. And so, look, here's a scenario where we logged in through the UI and we validated the UI is correctly hooked up to our authentication system. So we're good. Why do we need to keep doing that in all of our tests? Let's now make our test faster, better, more stable, and use whatever other systems we have in place just to set up test data. And then we can validate the appropriate stuff through the UI. So that is a common concern, but I would say just make sure what people are really worried about is the system connections. They're like, how do I know that the UI is correctly hooked up to the API? Well, you test at one time. You want to write an automated test? Go ahead and write an automated test for that. Good. You've got it. It works. Excellent. Now we don't need to validate that again.
Yeah. It's insightful because I had a lot of things in my head after that, but let's keep our questions less questions and less we're going to take all of the time. It's a really interesting subject, and all of this deconstructing because from my experience, and I've been testing for a while, we always go, or at least in the old companies, we take those manual tests and we convert them into automated UI tests. And that's a big mistake because, well, everything that you have been talking about. But even talking with testers and saying, well, this is not the way and we need to deconstruct that and break those tests. And all of this way of thinking is really, really hard to achieve. So it's all of a process. It's explaining like you're doing, naming it atomic testing, things like that, making this analogies with unit tests that sometimes help, sometimes don't, because they always assume, well, it should be technical because now it's unit tests. But, well, yeah, a lot of things to say. But my next question is, when we are implementing atomic tests, what are the challenges or difficulties that someone can have? Well, I already talked to some of those, but in your opinion?
Definitely the testability of the application. That's where I can see a lot of challenges arising. And not only from a technical perspective, right? Because if your application is not very testable, that's one challenge. Then arises a different challenge from that, which I find is common and frustrating to me, is that if there is such a challenge, when teams are in silos, like a QA team is in a silo from the dev team, many times they don't want to talk to the dev team and resolve that technical challenge. It's totally fine. It seems to me a lot of times it's part of the culture. We work in silos here. We don't communicate with the dev team. They throw stuff over the wall. We handle it. And then if it doesn't work, we complain to our managers. So that's another challenge that comes along with that. So if you have those challenges taken care of, then another interesting thing can come about is, how do I implement an atomic test, right? So if you talk about a login situation, there are numerous ways to log into an application. I have a tutorial on YouTube talking about atomic tests. In that one, I think I do one atomic test using a JSON web token login. I do another atomic test doing like an HTML web form, and then another one I do with a cookie. So those are just three login mechanisms. There are numerous others. You can log in with like OAuth. You can log in with like Google Authentication, numerous ways, right? So how do you figure out how your system is even works in order to be able to write an atomic test? So that's either learning and understanding the documentation and the insights of your system, or having conversations again with the developers to understand and maybe come to them and say, hey, I have this problem. Do you know of a better solution? So I think those are the primary challenges. Once you understand your system, once you understand how it can be deconstructed in smaller tests, and then you just got to figure out how to make, that'll leave another challenge that can happen is, now how do you compile all of your atomic tests together in order to feel comfortable with your coverage, right? Again, going back to our login scenario that we talked about, you need one scenario to make sure that the UI is correctly hooked up to the API. And then after that, you can have other scenarios that don't go through the UI. And so It's just a different way of thinking of your application now in components and putting those little components together to make sure you feel comfortable with the coverage.
So I think you already kind of answered this, because I was going to ask how we can make this typical Selenium or UI test atomic. And I think you basically answered it, trying to understand exactly, decompose the problem in smaller problems and trying to find, work with the development team to try to see ways of optimizing the flow. And connected to that, so I remember that if we think, and this question also, I remember when we talk about unit tests and they are like, even tools that generate like unit tests automatically, in the end, we could have a tool that would basically write parallel code that basically replicates the original code. Where do I want to go with this? Isn't there like a risk as it can happen also with unit tests, if you have too much of them, that we are trying that the atomic tests are too much loose to the code? Or maybe that's a misconception.
Interesting question.
Because if I change, if for example, in those scenarios that you are talking about, if we change certain aspects about that in the end, we took advantage of about the authentication mechanism or things like that, that we take advantage in order to make the atomic tests, then if we change that, basically we are, aren't we getting very specific to the actual implementation code, or is this a concern that we should have in mind, or?
That's a good point, actually. So we do get more specific to the implementation of the actual application, right? We're not like digging into the internals of how the application is implemented, but we go one layer beneath the UI. So mm-hmm. a lot of these atomic tests that we're talking about happening at the UI layer, what we're really saying is start using lower layers to set up your system before testing.
Like the UI. The APIs.
Yeah, APIs, or I'll give you another good example, our sample app web, sauce.demo.com, that app is an open source repository. The first version of it had a login just via cookie. So you just drop cookies via JavaScript, and then you could log in. So, you know, again, below the UI layer. So an interesting thing did happen with that application. We made a version 2 of it, and we updated how people authenticate. The whole app was basically rewritten, but we also updated how people authenticate. And so now the way we used to log in needed, the implementation of that needed to change in our automated tests. We now needed to authenticate the correct way versus the way that would exist before. But also the whole app needed to be rewritten. So it's like the whole app changed, you know? So was that change a valid change in our automated tests? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
On my opinion, yeah, it should, because when you change, well, there's this misconception that, it's partially true that if you're using the UI, you kind of are abstracting those kinds of things, because it doesn't matter what you have beneath, it will use them. But it has the counterpart that is, well, if it fails on the UI, does it mean that the login is really failing or not? So you have these things. I believe that the balance between the layer it, so testing pieces beneath, understanding that if all of the pieces are properly tested and everything is working and green, if we connect everything, the problem, like you said, it will be more focused. So I know that the piece of the authentication is working. If the UI is not working, the authentication is not working, it's probably something between those layers or in the UI itself. So it's more focused. But the question in case is that if we are rewriting the code, I would expect also to have tests that go with it. And if it's not doing creating new tests, at least rewriting those that are there. It's part of the work. I mean, for me, it's something that we must address and do. My opinion, yeah.
Nikolai, one last question before we end up this episode. Resources. Where can our listeners learn more about atomic testing or any other meaningful resources that you would like to share?
Yeah, sure. So the best place to start with learning atomic testing is if you go to ultimateqa.com and just search atomic tests. You'll find I did like several blog posts on it. Started with smaller ones, built up to larger ones because people kept asking more questions. Then you can go to Ultimate QA on YouTube, and you'll find I did a tutorial or two on there. And then if you want to follow me on social media, at Nikolai_A00 on Twitter, and then on LinkedIn, I'm Nikolai@Volotkin. And if you have any questions at any time, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to talk about atomic testing or any other.
Thank you. Thank you, Nikolai. Thanks for being here with us to help us uncover atomic testing and how it can help teams pursue greater quality and provide better ways for making testers more efficient and also more clear, and also to support better root cause analysis. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And before ending our episode, it's time for some vitamins. We know that in general, they're good for our health. In this case, we'll be talking about vitamin X, where X stands for X-ray. With X-ray, you can adapt the atomic testing approach, allowing you to link those tests to the requirements and bring visibility of them to the entire team. The team can now review and implement them, fostering the quality mentality. Once the execution of the tests are done, test reports will be ingested into X-ray, bringing visibility of the results into your project management tool. X-ray will act as the source of truth, gathering definition of tests, planning, coverage of requirements, and results, giving your team new ways to analyze and link that data to extract valuable conclusions.
And we've reached the end of our episode. And in this episode, we learned more about atomic testing, a way to rethink how we approach automated testing so that we can validate what is produced in an atomic way, making it faster, reliable, and independent. Atomic testing is not easy and will demand our teams to look to testing in different ways, reshaping the tests we already have or helping you to start with the right foot with your automation. But it will definitely be worth it. See you in our next QA therapy session to share and learn together.
So see you in our next therapy session. Happy testing!
Happy testing!